This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who, through their financial donations and pledges, keep this podcast going week after week and month after month and year after year. And in particular, I want to welcome Migs Rangel, Michael Mode, and Orlando Ferrer. Thank you guys very much for your financial donations to help keep this podcast going. You are now Friends of the Magic Word, and I sincerely appreciate your donations. We are heading into our 11th year. Actually, we're heading into our 12th year. We just completed, or we're about to complete, our 11th year of this podcast, nearing 700 episodes. If you haven't had a chance to listen to all of them, you can go back into the archives and just do a search for just about anybody in magic and you can find them. As I said, I want to thank all the Friends of the Magic Word for their donations. I thank all of you who have not yet joined the Friends of the Magic Word. And I say yet because I expect soon you will. I appreciate all those who have given their financial backing to this podcast because during the past couple of years, we have had some people, due to unfortunate financial circumstances, have had to either reduce or delete their pledges, and so or may have had an intent to donate but then change their mind just due to circumstances. If you find yourself in a financial situation in which that you can assist the Magic Word Podcast, we would be greatly appreciative of your support. If you go to the MagicWordPodcast.com, there you'll find a link or a little tab that'll say Become a Friend of the Magic Word, and you can get more information there on how that you can donate through Patreon.com or through PayPal. You can give a monthly pledge or one-time donation. Also, there's a short video of a much younger Scott Wells there telling you and appealing to you why it is that we need these funds from you. And even though I'm much younger in that video, the information that I discuss there is no less important then as it is now. And that's exactly what we do with your funds, is again helping to defray our many expenses that are associated with producing this podcast. Well, enough of that about that. Thank you again for considering becoming a Friend of the Magic Word. Well, this week we are going to take you to Austin, Texas, where we were at the recent Collectors Expo, Magic Collectors Expo, that was hosted by Bill Smith. And it was just a wonderful weekend. And while there were just a plethora of so many magicians I wanted to sit down and talk with. And I did get a couple, some of which we will be hearing in future weeks. But this week we talk with someone who is going to complete the triumvirate, if you will. Malcolm Puckering, or Puck for short, is someone who has been working for a long number of years in magic and got his start really working with Denny and Lee of Denny Haney, and other people who worked with him was Alain New and Scott Alexander. And so that's why I say I'm completing the triumvirate, because those three gentlemen, that is Scott, Alain, and Puck, were the three who worked most closely with Denny and Lee and toured with them. And so we talk about that here on the podcast. I have had episodes with both Scott Alexander and Alain New here on the Magic Word Podcast, and in fact, I have a video that shows Denny Haney on one of my TV talk show types of things I do at magic conventions, because now you see it with Scott Wells. If you just do a search on the website for the Magic Word Podcast for Denny Haney, you should be able to find that video, which was taken at the MAES convention several years ago. I really don't want to spoil too much of this, because I think you will enjoy our conversation as we get to know Puck this week on The Magic Word. We're going to be going on a different voyage today, because typically I have conversations with people who have been friends of mine for many years that I have been associated, worked with, for whatever reason, have known personally for a long time. And today I'm going to get to know someone along with you. So as opposed to my usual style of conversation, it's going to be kind of a get to know each other what I call a speed date, okay, in a way. So today we're going to be talking with a fellow who I know a little bit about, and the reason I want to talk with him because of his fascinating background, and that's Malcolm Puckering, who goes by the name of Puck. Hello, Puck. How are you, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I am so glad that you're here. I know you work over at Monday Night Magic a lot of times, don't you? Because you live in New York?
Well, I'm originally from New York, but now I live down in Florida. I'm down in Orlando area now, so okay. I don't get back to Monday Night Magic as much as I used to.
Is that where Scott Alexander is? Isn't he in?
Scott's actually in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he live in Florida for a while?
He did. At one point, he worked at Malone's Magic Bar, and he moved down there for a little bit.
What I remember. You never worked there, though, did you?
No. That was before. I was still living up north when
you're really more of a stand-up guy as opposed to stage, as opposed to close-up?
I actually started out as a bird act and a manipulator, and that's all I did for like the first 10 years. And then I got into illusions. I did illusions for a long time. And now I do more stand-up magic because it's just it's cheaper to travel.
Well, I understand that. Another reason I wanted to talk with you is because I wanted to complete the triumvirate. I have had a conversation with Scott Alexander. I've had one with Alon New and now with you, which all three of you guys were working with Denny Haney and were good buddies and all in the book and everything. And so that's why I thought it was important that we, again, complete that.
Circle.
That's right. Did you ever actually work with Denny?
Oh, yes. I was Denny's assistant for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. I had just moved to Maryland from New York and was looking for a vanishing bird cage. And I went to a magic shop called Barry's Magic Shop out in Wheaton, Maryland. Hmm. And Barry told me that this guy, Denny, had just retired from, you know, his touring show and that he put together a magic shop in his rehearsal studio and he might have what I needed. So I went down and got the cage from him. We became close friends. And then I auditioned for a show, and I toured 8 years with him.
Now he was with Lee, Denny and Lee, when he was touring. Now he had two or three Lees, or
no, he had two. His first was his wife Lee, and then
because he was in Vietnam and met her over there. She was Vietnamese.
Yes, she was.
Yeah,
and then they got divorced, and then Denny ended up getting another Vietnamese girl. Her name was Min. And Min took over in place of, they never changed the name. They kept it Denny and Lee. So she played the Lee part for the rest of his career. So she pretty much was with the show for about 16 years.
Did you work with both of them and know them?
No, I only work with Min.
Min, okay.
Yes, that was before my time.
I was going to say, I wondered how the second one took to being a replacement and doing, or I assume.
Well, I mean, the funny thing about it was that Lee did the show, but Lee, she didn't think it was, you know, when people laughed, she thought they were laughing at her. So she didn't like comedy in the show. So they did the illusions. They did the act pretty straight.
Gotcha.
And when he got Min in the show, Min loved the comedy and loved to have fun, you know, play around. So the show took a whole nother, you know, perspective once Min got with the show. That's when he developed the whole comedy, you know, aspect of the illusions and everything.
Was she that much a part of the act in which she would suggest to him, Denny, why don't we do such and such? I think this would play well. Or
yeah, they would come up with ideas. Because, I mean, first of all, we drove everywhere. All the shows were real far. We'd be in that van
up and down
hours.
The East Coast, basically.
East Coast. And sometimes, you know, we go into the middle
Midwest.
Of the country. Mm-hmm. But we always drove. And when we was in the car, ideas would come up. And then, you know, she would bounce things off of him and vice versa.
Funny.
And, you know, and then even when Alan was with the show, he would come up with ideas. And they would always, Alan.
Oh, Alan, that's right. Yeah.
And they would incorporate things together. So, so everybody kind of, you know, added a little bit to the show.
Because he's Vietnamese, too.
Yes.
So I wonder if he speaks. I don't never ask him if he actually speaks Vietnamese. Did they ever talk Vietnamese between the two of them? Did you ever hear that?
No, it's funny. I never ever heard them speak Vietnamese. And Denny was fluent.
Yeah.
You know, because he was an interpreter in Vietnam in the war. So I have no idea. Yeah, they never did it in front of me.
Yeah, no. It just occurred to me that just now. It's like, they both were having that.
Yeah, well, he raised that. He raised Alan, and you know, Alan was a kid when he started with the show, and he, you know, took him on the road, and you know,
he seems like a father to him, almost
definitely like a father
figuratively. Yeah. And so when you had come to the show, Alon was still working there as well? Or
I took over for Alon.
Oh, because he was doing what? Where'd he go?
Denny started managing Alon, and Alon did this whole Asian-style act where, like, you know, he did aerial fishing. He did, you know, Where Did the Ducks Go? You know, very Asian-style show, and he got him booked into the Showboat in Atlantic City. And it was an extended run, so he needed somebody to take over for him. So that's when I went in and auditioned for the show.
Yeah. Now, when you say audition, how did you find out about the show?
There was a kid named Rahan Jackson. He used to actually work for Rich Block for Collectors Workshop, and we became friends. And he heard that Denny needed an assistant, so he called me and said he wanted a job, but he didn't have a car. to get to the shop. So okay. he said, I should call Denny. So I called Denny, and Denny says, come on down to the shop. So I went down to the shop, and he took me in the basement, and he got his daughter, Dawn, and we put her on the sword suspension. And he said, he showed me what to do, and we got her on the sword suspension. And he says, all right, you got the job. Be back here at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. And he taught me the rest of the show on the road, on the way.
Just like that?
Yeah, on the way to the show.
So you really didn't have a rehearsal before the first time you performed?
No. I mean, it was so bad that oh, my God, the first show. It was. If you ever seen the video that Denny sold, Denny and Lee Live at the Wells Theater.
Okay.
That was my first show.
Oh.
When you can, and he introduces me as Malcolm, matter of fact, yeah. in the video. And I did the sword suspension, and he gives me one of the swords that come out as a ninja. Uh-huh. During his song, I'm swinging his sword and I broke the sword and I'm stuck with the handle and the sword is gone. It just snapped off.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh God, I'm so fired the first day. And, yeah. and he's laughing his behind off because yeah. thank God I'm thinking I broke the, you know, the gimmick sword.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, and he still did the show. And then
did he leave that in later?
He wanted to. He wanted to figure out a way to make that
every time,
every single time because it was so funny. But another thing he did was the legs table.
Yeah.
She would bring in the table, and then he would pick it up, and the leg would fall off the first one.
Yeah.
And I tried to run on stage to help him, and Min was like, no, what are you doing? And I was like, no, the table broke, because I'm so new to magic, you know, I didn't know. And yeah, so it just went on like that, and, you know, I was with the show for 6 years before I found out how the canvas-covered trunk worked. I never knew.
You know? Watched it, but you were still fooled from the wings.
I was part of it, but never knew how the heck they got switched.
And you never asked.
Canvas. I never asked.
Did he assume you knew, or...
I think he knew I didn't know, and then the person who told me how it worked and really pissed me off was Peter White. Remember Peter White, P&A Silks?
P&A Silks.
Yeah. Peter, he told me the secret, and I was like, no! And then once I knew, I was like, oh, I was so disappointed, because, well, you know,
most
I loved having the mystery of not knowing how something worked that I was so close to, you know? And then at later years, I had to find out how it worked, because I ended up doing it in the show with Scott and Denny. We would do a triple switch with it.
Okay. Yeah. That would have been funny if you would have at that point saying, well, Denny, I'm sorry to report, I'd like to do this, but I don't know how that works. He's going to say, what? You've done this for like 15 years.
I know. I would always see this one little gimmick. I won't say what it is. I find it in the trunk after the show. I'm like, what is this thing for, you know? And I found out later, I was like, oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
That was great.
I'm kind of the same way. I remember watching Siegfried and Roy and seeing the stage shows, and when they would descend from the ceiling with a lady and she would disappear and be a tiger or something. I never, and still, do not want to know certain large illusions that I will never perform. Now, if it's something that I think I want to put in the show or something that I would like to learn, I will seek out the secret. Then at this point in my life, I know most, like with you, most all secrets after a certain number of years and experience. But still, I love being fooled, and I don't like to know the secret for some things that I don't think I'll ever want to do.
Or yes.
I don't see myself doing tigers, for an example, kind of a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So that's interesting. That was something that you weren't doing at the time.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, I knew it was a hard trick to do because there's only a few magicians that actually did it on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was a hard trick to do. So I was like, nah, I'll do the old stub trunk, you know?
And when you were touring with him, I assume it was some sort of a big van or something that...
Yeah, we had a truck, and then he also had the van. The truck we would take if we did, like, backstage with the magician. Like, we had to bring the really big illusions for some of the corporates. But usually everything would pack in the small van. And he had his show made to a certain level where everything flew over the counter. So we were all at 70 pounds, so I could take two pieces, Min could take two pieces, and he could check two pieces, and we can check a whole illusion show over the counter. He even had the sub trunk plane down like an eighth of an inch to take enough weight off it so we go over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Try to keep it just within. So
yeah, he has sword basket, sword suspension, and the sub trunk, and we do the full illusion show.
What was your favorite of the illusions?
I'd probably say the trunk, because the trunk just, it killed everything. And Denny had it down to a science. I mean, every show, I mean, at least 96% of the time, they would leap to their feet. Not even like one person and another person. Like, they would jump to their feet, you know? I mean, it was just, it was so well thought out. And the music and everything was just great.
Did he work a lot with the music to try to get that? I know, like, a lot of us will listen to different kinds of music. And I mean, I had a subtrunk for 3 years until I found the right music, to tell you the truth. I mean, I'd rehearse it. I wanted to do it, but I just didn't have the right music.
Yeah, he definitely had played around with different music until he found, you know, just the perfect music. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's so weird. So I saw a lecture one time with Jonathan Pendragon talking about infusing music with magic. And a lot of guys find the trick first and then they find music to fit it. I'm the opposite. I find music that I love and I say, one day I'm going to find a trick for this. And I've done that with at least four pieces of my show.
Interesting.
That I've had the music for years in my head, and then finally I get the trick and I said, now I found a marriage for it. And, you know, so I do a little backwards.
That's probably the better way of doing it, because this way, I mean, we have investments in something waiting for the music to come, as opposed to you have the music and so, okay, well, now I'm going to, you don't have like thousands of dollars invested just sitting there doing nothing until the music comes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. And it's, and you also have a personal connection to the music, because it's something that you really, really enjoy. So it might help.
Is there a certain kind of music that you prefer? Is it jazz or?
It's funny. I'm very eclectic with my music. I use jazz, I use
classical,
I use hip-hop, I've used pop. I mean, I've used some obscure styles of music. I mean, my show has, people have always commented that the music in my show is very diverse, because it's very different, and it's stuff that I really like, you know. And I find a lot of times movie music for movies works really well sometimes, too.
Well, I think so, too, and it resonates also with people. So when people hear that music, they associate with the movie. However, if you see it in the context of a magic show, you might forever then after remember that trick as opposed to the movie. So they're familiar with it, and they're going to hear it more often. And so that's a good way of doing it. Do you find that your style was really influenced a lot by Denny?
Yeah. I mean, to a point where I was emulating him on stage, to a point where I had to break away from that.
That's funny.
And trying to find my own self.
Yeah.
Because I was just doing Denny on stage, you know, and Denny did Red Skelton, you know, because that's who he.
Well, you don't have any hair.
I know that he looked like Grandpa from the Monsters at the end of the show.
I recall also he was big on the school circuit, doing a lot of colleges, and you were talking about corporate shows also. I assume you did schools with him too. So
yeah, he did. Well, he was really big on the college market. He did NACA convention. I knew I think he gave you 10 minutes, and he got a standing ovation, and they went back to the booth, and they block booked his whole year. And he was, you know, really big on the college circuit. And that was back when the colleges were paying a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And but I didn't work colleges with him. I just did the corporates.
Oh, you did?
I came in towards the end.
So it was just him and Min?
Yes, it's him and Min and myself, and we would do the corporates.
Well, I mean, as far as the school shows.
It was just... Oh, the school shows. No. He took Alan.
Oh, he did then, back then.
Yeah, Alan did it.
Because I know Alan's done a lot of school shows then as well. So I wonder if he was kind of influenced, and he was kind of in that market, knew how about NACA and all that.
Could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. Well, Denny managed him when he first started. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he managed Alan's, you know, career in the very beginning. So, yeah, I'm sure he must have had some contacts in the college market.
Right, right. And that's why I wondered if you had done some of that, because I remember Denny telling me when, was it, I think maybe when he had the Baltimore shop. I'm trying to remember if it was the Vegas Magic Shop, but I believe it was from Baltimore. He was lamenting having given up that, as you said, lucrative career, really doing school shows, because he said, I felt like I was at the top of the game and I wanted to get out. And I thought the place where there's going to be money are brick and mortar magic shops. He said, if I would have known, he said that was really the beginning still of colleges. They were on the rise and I thought they had peaked and I was jumping off and putting money into the brick and mortar. It's just the opposite directions of
Denny, the college market, I think at 1.2, he was doing more and more, like he was doing the bullet catch at colleges.
I didn't know he did that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, was it a pistol or a rifle?
A rifle.
No
kidding. Yeah, Denny, I mean, he's in the book, I guess, was it David Benn in the book? Yeah, he put him in the book about one of the people who toured with that trick. But he did it, and it was, I mean, it wasn't very dangerous, but still, I wouldn't do it. But he said one time he caught a kid putting, like, paper clips and all kind of different things in the
muzzle of the rifle,
in the muzzle,
the gun barrel.
Yeah. So he said after that, he said, forget it. I'm not gonna risk myself anymore.
Doing wow.
This.
No, you wouldn't. You have to keep your eye on what's going to be going on. I know Penn and Teller do theirs, which was given to them by Banachek a long time ago, and they give honor to him and homage. But theirs is 100% safe, and Banachek's 100% safe. It yet looks to be incredibly dangerous. And it's difficult to have that right kind of mix. It's like smash and stab kind of a thing.
Yeah, like Scott's versions are, you have to be, you can't hurt yourself.
You're an idiot. Yeah, there's no way you can hurt yourself.
There's no way possible, you know.
His is brilliant with the broken bottles.
The bottle and also the nail. Nailed it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Both versions are completely 100% safe.
Right, yeah. Right. Every time Scott, I don't like to attend Scott Alexander's lectures because I always buy something, and not just something. It's like, I'm going to do that, because I can see myself doing this stuff that he's always teaching. It's so darn clever and very funny, and it allows for a lot of, commercial, allows you to put your presentation into it and everything. And so you three guys, your styles are different, with Scott being so funny and Alan doing a lot of mentalism and spoon bending and everything, and then you're doing, would you still do classic Doves kind of thing anymore?
I haven't done birds in a long time, but now I still do a lot of manipulation and show a lot of classical.
So when you're working like at Saturday, Monday Night Magic in New York, what do you do?
I still do Dancing Handkerchief. I do a Hanky Panky, which is our version of a 20th Century Soap with a visual, thing at the end. I do billiard balls, still do billiard balls in the show. Mm-hmm. I still do an egg bag now to
That's
honor Danny.
Love it. Yeah.
I do Miser's Dream with Bubbles. It was a routine we came up called Wishes. And stuff. So yeah, you do razor blades, needles.
A lot of talking, actor. But you do some.
I do talking, but I'm not a comedy magician. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's funny moments or comments, but nothing like a laugh a minute type of thing.
Not like Scott Alexander's would be.
No, not at all. And much more skilled magic where it's just more knuckle busting. Mm-hmm. Magic is just a little bit more my style.
How much do you practice still?
I practice a lot. Okay. I still practice a lot. Like when I'm on a ship and I have to do a show, I'll start practicing that morning for the evening show. Mm-hmm. Just to a point now where I don't even know if I need to practice, but it's more for ritual. Mm-hmm. It just makes me feel more comfortable.
Put you in the zone. I understand. There have been just a few times when the three of you have worked together. And I remember also at Abbott's get together one time in which Denny was there and you guys had the whole evening show.
Oh, yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, Scott and I still work together. Matter of fact, we're at the castle in like 2 weeks.
Okay.
And we do a show together. And that show is so much fun because, I get to be the straight guy and he gets to be the goofy guy. And it just really works.
Right.
And we get to do a lot of the magic that we've created.
In the palace, not the parlor, I guess.
Yeah, work in the palace,
Okay. Yeah, and by the way, when people are listening to this, we're recording this here on April the 15th, I believe. And so, I don't know, this may have passed by the time you will have missed fucking...
We were at the Magic Castle.
And we killed.
That's what I'm sticking with.
Yes, there you go. Exactly. Do you have a room you prefer? Obviously, you say you don't know little close-ups. I guess you like working in the palace. So.
Yeah, I like that. I've only worked the palace, and I've been asked to do the close-up room and the parlor room, but the reason why I don't want to do it is just because there's no camaraderie for me in that room, because in the palace I get to work with other guys, but in those rooms you're by yourself.
That's true.
So I enjoy, working with other acts.
Being backstage and everything.
Now
you don't attend, speaking of that, magicians, the conventions, like we are recording this right now at the Magic Collectors Expo here in Austin, Texas, and you don't attend necessarily a lot of conventions, or do you? I attend a lot. I've not seen you
only
a lot.
I've only mostly attended conventions and I'm working. And I've worked a lot of conventions, throughout my career in magic.
Right.
But I usually don't go just for fun. But this was one I really wanted to go to because it's such a different, style of convention.
True.
And I went to one time with Denny in Baltimore. It was a collector's convention, and I
had
loved
a great
it.
Time.
Yeah, it was just great. It's just how much you learn about the history and everything about magic and to see the old props and everything. It's really cool.
And the kinds of sessions they have where they talk about history and show films or videos, presentations, PowerPoint, or just having people as well. Plus, we have the advantage now in Austin of getting to see Ray Anderson's show at Esther's Follies.
Oh, my gosh.
Talk about that. Did you enjoy that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was just an experience. I'd been hearing about this show for so many years, and I was kind of saying, I hope I'm not going to be disappointed, because when they build it up that big, when you see it, and you're like, it was okay, But it was everything that they said it was going to be. I mean, just the use of the room by itself blew me away, how they can use this small space and get so much out of it and
have
make
a window
it,
behind them.
Yeah, and work with a window and incorporate the people walking behind the street, you know, and it's genius. Yeah, it's very, and it's so topical that they must change that show every other month,
Oh, no, every week. when they get together. It's like, what was in the news this week? And because they're in the state capitol, there are a lot of political things that are happening. Plus, the University of Texas is here. So
full songs and everything just written on the spot. It's amazing.
Yep. That's great. And so going back again to Monday Night Magic, circle back to that again, because whenever that you are doing that, I know they have a lot of people who are coming through. It seems like, although they do have people from out of town, it's only when they're kind of coming and visiting, but it seems to have kind of the same group of people. So you've performed several times there.
I started a Monday Night Magic back when they were at the Sullivan Street Playhouse.
So did I.
And
I was
oh my gosh, it was great.
It was great.
And I was back then, I was a bird act. And I would drive in the 2.5 hours from Maryland. I'd go in, do the show, and I'd go out to dinner with them, and they'd give me pointers, and they'd sit down and draw me diagrams on placemats and things I need to work on and change. And then I'd drive back to Maryland. And then I'd come back like the next week and do it again and show the stuff that I had incorporated in the show. Mm-hmm. You know, and at the time I was also working with Vito Lupo, who was one of my my teachers. And Vito, when he would sit there and it would, you know, it was a learning experience for me, Monday Night Magic. And that's why to this day I give them so much credit, because they opened up. The other reason why I got into the Magic Castle the first time was the video that was shot there, you know, and just they really helped me out a lot.
Yeah. And speaking of Vito Lupo, he is not only a creative genius and great performer and everything, but a good teacher as well. I know for a long time he was working as an Imagineer, and he would work with Disney. They would come in like on Monday mornings or something, flying in from wherever he was.
He was living in Ocala. He moved to Florida for a little bit.
To kind of be closer to that, I guess, or that kind of a thing. So how did you get connected with Vito?
We went to the same high school.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, we went to the same schools, and me, him, guy Glenn Farrington. Glenn went to the same school with us. Wow. You know, it was a lot of really talented people, and I knew of him, and I saw him perform when I was younger. And then I was working at Magic Convention. I think it was MAS. He was there, and we started talking and realized we went to the same school and everything.
Funny.
And then I said, I'm looking for somebody to help me, you know, put this act together. And he volunteered, and it was great. Yeah, we'd go to the house because he still lived in – he had his house in Baldwin in New York. So I would go to the house, and we would work on stuff. And,
I think he's in Italy now. Is that right?
Yeah, he's overseas.
Yeah, I was thinking he was overseas. And speaking of overseas and talking about some of the cruise ships and things you were doing, was that anything that Denny had helped you with, or how did that evolve?
The cruise ships, there was a guy named Curtis Carroll. He was a hypnotist, and he also was putting together this big illusion show. He came to Denny's shop when he moved from Seattle to Maryland and said he was looking for somebody to help him. Mm-hmm. So Denny told him about me, you know, that I assisted him. So he basically called me and said, would I be interested in helping him with these illusions? So I went and helped him out. We became really good friends. And he was a very successful cruise ship entertainer. And he just, by working, without even seeing my act, he said, you want to work on ships? I said, sure. And he called, and I went out sight unseen on Princess Cruises direct, just from his, you know, his recommendation.
Through an agent?
No, just from him telling the office, book this guy. And that was it.
So the ship paid you directly?
Yep. Yeah, we got paid direct. We got paid cash back then too.
So after that, did you continue to go back and work on that line, or did you ultimately find an agent?
Yeah, I stayed with Princess for a while, and we weren't. I mean, I was mediocre. I wasn't a great act, you know. So I didn't.
What
work
year would
a
this
lot.
Have been ish?
This was 95. I want to say around 95, 96. Mm-hmm. And we worked sporadically here and there, but I was also working as a waiter full time to pay bills, and I would do the ships every once in a while. And then I ended up getting an agent. And once I got an agent, then I started working more. I started working other lines.
Because I've heard it before said that you should not necessarily contact all of the ships if you're interested in working in a ship, because if they don't book you or they overlook you or whatever, then you go to an agent. They will ask you, what other ships have you talked to? Because if you say, well, I've talked to Princes and all these others, then they will say, oh, well, they didn't take you. Then I don't want to run you by again because they've already said no to you.
If somebody else has submitted you too, they don't want to double submit you, because then the bookers, they don't want to get involved in a war between agents. So they just say, I'm not even going
to
use this.
That's why
guy.
I think it's better if someone is getting ready to work a ship. And things have changed dramatically, obviously, since then. Mm-hmm. And even when I was doing it in the early 2000s, it is so much different now. But I still, I think, would recommend going to an agent rather than trying to book a direct.
You know, yeah, I would say an agent. But also right now, a lot of these lines are interested in booking direct sometimes.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're a good act, I mean, think about it, is that working on land.
You're talking about post-COVID right now. Yeah, you're talking about, okay.
Post-COVID. Mm-hmm. But working on land and working in ships is two different worlds. I mean, the show that you may have on land that works great for you, it might die 1,000 deaths on the ship and vice versa.
Give an example. And why?
Because, first of all, the audience doesn't, they're not there for you. They're there for the ship. Mm. They have other things going on. So you have to really get them quick, and you also have to have an act that's going to involve everybody, you know, the kids and the adults and the old people, you know.
Sure.
I mean, it's just
all ages.
And also, you don't know what their day is like. They might be in port really early in the morning, they go on tours, they get back on, it's a late night show, 10 o'clock at night, and you know, they might
they're
fall asleep or they might want to walk out, you know. So I mean, it's just you know, learning how to work ships, it took me a long time to get the formula of a show that actually worked regularly. Mm-hmm. You know, took some time.
And when you were out, did you go for 2 weeks, 6 weeks at a time? Or
when I first started, I would do 6 weeks at a time. And then when I worked a illusion show that Scott put together, I was out for 10 weeks at a time. Wow. But now I don't do more than 1 to 2 weeks tops.
That's because you're not carrying the illusions. Because typically, as I understand, mm-hmm. again, if they're booking an illusion show, they want you to stay out there because they paid for all that shipping.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. When I first started, I had like 16 cases.
Holy moly.
I had the illusions. I had my ex-wife. I had a parrot, my cockatoo. I had 7 doves, 5 parakeets, and a house cat. And they were all on the ship with me in my cabin.
And you had 2 shows, I guess, right? An A and a B show. So you had like, what, a 30-minute show and a 15?
I had 245s.
245s, okay.
Yeah, 245s.
Mm-hmm. And had to be completely different.
It's completely different material.
And both strong.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one strong and one okay. But once they love you, then you can get away with the bad show.
And also, I learned a long time ago as well that you always open with your best stuff.
Yes.
You don't want to say, I'm going to save this for the end because they love me. It's like, they may not come again.
Exactly. I made that mistake one time. Yeah, and I had a comic guy. He's a Disney actor. Rondell Sheridan saw me working. And I played this video of me on TV and everything in my second show.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, that should be in the first show because they're not coming back. You don't grab them, you know. So, yeah, it was a lesson I had to learn.
Do you like working onshore or off? Or
I mean,
on sea or what?
I enjoy the audiences on ships because the audiences are usually very enthusiastic, especially on – I'm mostly on Royal Caribbean now, and they're really good audiences. Mm-hmm. I just don't like being out there for lengthy amounts of time.
That's interesting you say, particularly the Royal Caribbean. How does one – audience for a cruise for a line differ from a different audience in a line? Is that because of how much they're paying?
No, it's all completely different by ships. Like I work for Oceania, which is all very wealthy, smaller
like
ships. Yes, exactly. Like, you know, 300 passengers.
Right.
And
they're tough to work for.
Yeah, and they've seen everything,
exactly.
Hard to impress, you know. Then Holland America, they're very old, mm-hmm. you know, where, you know, the average age of the guests is 70. You know, 75 years old,
mm-hmm.
and it gets
the average age
up,
is dead,
and it gets them, yeah, it gets above that. Yes, yeah, so Holland America is a hard line to work. You have to really. I worked well there because my show became autobiographical. I started talking more about my life, my things in my life, you know, my family, my background, things I went through, mm-hmm. and by doing that, they endeared me almost like a grandchild. And they liked me. I stopped getting handshakes and started getting hugs after my show, so I knew I was doing the right thing.
Would you not do that in a family show or something for Princess Line?
I've done that now. Yeah, Princess is and it also has to do with the length of the cruise. Changes the
if it's 3 day versus a week or
3 day cruise, you're going to get young,
right?
You know, partiers and stuff, and then the longer the cruise, of course, or the destination. You know, if it's exotic destinations and not just the Caribbean or Mexico, then you're going to get, you know, more wealthier people. Mm-hmm. You know, more versed in entertainment,
right?
Yes, so. Yeah, it's just every line is different. I've worked Carnival and I've worked, you know, Oceania. I've worked Princess, Holland America, NCL, and every single one is completely different. And some lines I do way better on than others. Some lines I don't do well on because it's just not my audience.
That's interesting. I really hadn't. I don't have that broad of an experience, so I never heard that before. That's interesting.
Yeah, every line.
Huh. You know, I can understand as far as the age groups and as far as the economic background on, you know, certain people and groups, and maybe perhaps even the cultural background, like in some places where you have to speak the language. You have no German. I mean, English may not be the primary language, for an example. So
yeah.
It could be a difficult. So,
Yeah, I just worked a ship, matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, and they were all British. The ship was out of Barbados, and they were all British.
They got a different sense of humor. than Americans.
I was dying out there. I was like, oh my God, can I buy a laugh? Can I buy something? Yeah, it was a rough one. So.
It's almost like their arms are crossed. It's like, fool me, you know, magic boy. Yeah, it's kind of like they've seen it. Yeah, I think British humor, I've heard that said about some groups even in America. Somebody told me a long time ago that you can tell if in Minneapolis when you're doing a show if there's an audience out there because they cast a shadow because they're not responsive.
Yeah,
maybe true or not, I've not worked that much in Minnesota.
Some of the best audiences I've ever had are out of Galveston, Texas.
No kidding.
Galveston, when I go to Galveston,
that's a carnival line,
but no, this is on Royal Caribbean.
Oh, okay.
And phenomenal audiences out of Galveston.
I think it's because it's a lot of Texans, and because we,
I guess,
Texans,
just that the attitude or whatever it may be, they're some of the best audiences I've worked for. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And when you're working a corporate show, do you find do you do your same show? Do you customize it for
I
them?
Change my show sometimes for corporates.
In what way?
Just some of the material I use is not as I don't say commercial. It's commercial, but
not edgy.
But more adult oriented. Oh, you know, more sophisticated humor
for the corporate audience.
For the corporate audience.
Gotcha.
Than I went on a cruise ship.
Okay. Yeah. When you say adult, you don't mean like X-rated. You're talking
about not X-rated, that, but
like
just
not family kind
just,
of a thing.
Yeah, just more age appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Right. I just wonder whether that you actually try to incorporate more things where, let's say, with Exxon or IBM or somebody where you try to incorporate.
Well, I try sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I will, you know, try and incorporate some kind of messaging, mm-hmm. you know, for them, especially if they ask me to.
Right.
You know, ahead of time.
And so what are your thoughts about scripting?
I'm 100% scripted. Okay. I mean, I have enough ad libs where I can, you know, go off a little bit, but I stay pretty tight to my script. That's why when I work with Scott, it's always like, oh my God, what's he going to do next?
That's what I was wondering.
Every show to Scott is different.
Right.
And I'm always tight. So our shows can go really long sometimes mm-hmm. when he gets on a rant, you know, he's going on and stuff, but it keeps me on my toes. Yeah. Definitely keeps me on my toes.
Right. And you have lectured before. You have a lecture.
Yes.
You do. I know. I went to attend that some time ago. What is it that you prefer to teach? What do you talk about?
I mean, we talk about just, you know, performing for stand-up, you know, as a stand-up magician, stand-up crowds, mm-hmm. And a lot of just the routines that we've come up with and, you know, how we develop the ideas that we come up with for tricks. Because it's always like a really lengthy process before it actually gets to
What is your process?
Point. First of all, I do a lot of research to see what's been done before and go back in the old books. I find a lot of stuff in the old books that are great ideas but not practical, or they were written about an effect that never was really done, and I figure out ways to make it actually happen. And me and Scott will bang our heads, and then we'll start talking to some builders and people of that nature and say, hey, can this be done? And then we got to take the prototypes out and test them and work out all the bugs and then come up. You know, Scott's really good at the patter, putting together presentations for it. And I do more of the technical portions and stuff.
Do you build? Do you know much about woodworking? And
not really. Yeah, Scott does a little bit, but
Denny.
No. But I do sewing and things of that nature. Anything like that I can put together. But we have builders for a lot of stuff that we do.
And so when you're coming up with an idea or something, you're trying to put your own little twist on it, just like you were talking about Miser's dream of having bubbles instead of coins.
Yeah, yeah. We wanted to do something that was that had the feeling of snow, but not snow, because everybody and their mother was doing snow at the time, and we wanted to do something different. So came up with this idea of doing a Miser's dream, but with bubbles, and at the end have the shower of bubbles come out of the pail.
Right.
So that way you can get the whole grand. And we made the story very personal, too. Like I talked about, you know, my family, my daughter and stuff. And I found the music I'd always wanted to use. I found a place for it in that trick.
Wow. It just like came to you.
Yeah.
You?
Well, I always wanted to use Pure Imagination, Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah.
For like 10 years. And I was like, oh, and I said, this is going to work great for this trick. And it did.
When you use music that is ASCAP, do you have to pay for that? Or how?
Not on the ships. The ships, they do a royalty. Like the castle does like a thing with BMI and ASCAP. But if I want to go on television.
That's what I was going to say. Have you ever worked Masters of Illusion?
I'm not Masters. I've done AGT. I've done Fool Us. And it's.
They won't let you use.
No. Well, the funny thing with AGT is the music, I had to submit three different songs and they got permission for one, but the one I really wanted, they hadn't had permission for it yet. And they said, well, practice was all three and we'll let you know right, you know, which when we get permission. And I was doing a live show. Mm-hmm. They told me 5 minutes before I walked on stage for live television what song I would be using.
Oh, my gosh.
And me and Scott just looked at each other. Wow. And I was like, I wonder if they did this just to make me nervous, to make me look, you know, you know, more intense. But it scared the crap out of me. But yeah, but thank God I had practiced with all three really well.
What was your experience like on that, on AGT?
Oh, I mean, it was great. I mean, they, you know, they treated me well until I lost.
And then you were like, yesterday's news.
Once I lost, they were like, ah, they hit me with the boot and I was gone. And that was it. But when I was doing well, they were putting everything behind me. So
did you advance how many times? Once or twice?
I advanced twice, got into the semifinals.
Mm-hmm. Did you really think, hey, I'm going someplace? Or do you have a good feeling about
when
it?
When I got to the semifinals, I was like, wow. It's like, first I was like, oh, I can really win this thing. And then I started thinking I had the perfect trick. And they were fighting me on it. They fought me on a lot of things, you
really?
Know, as far as what I wanted to do. They always wanted me to go bigger, bigger, bigger. And I had an idea to do a card trick.
Yeah.
And it was a personal card trick about my father. And they fought me on it. They says, no, it won't work. It's too small. And then the next season, everybody's doing card tricks and everybody's at the table. And all the things I told them would work, they didn't trust me. They didn't believe me. They said, no, it's got to be big. You know, and I guess it was just ahead of my time.
And that was the one. Because you wanted to do that, and you did something else that you weren't as comfortable, and that was the one that killed you.
Yeah, well, I got through, but I just did a competition. I actually lost to a dog act.
I hate that. I'm not, yeah. Yeah, well, there was one dog act went on in one year. Was that the year?
That was the year I was on.
Well, that's not bad if you get beat out by somebody who won.
Yeah, I was on with comic Tom Cotter talks about it all the time. He's like, yeah, we got beat by dogs.
Well, I recall Kevin James talking about that, where he had some illusion that he was wanting to do, and they said, no, we want you to do this other one. And the one they wanted him to do, he ended up getting voted off the island or whatever at that point.
Yeah.
If he would have done what he wanted, he thinks he would have had a better shot at it.
Yeah, I mean, I luckily had been on the show the year before with Scott as a consultant and assistant, so I knew how the show worked. So when I went on, I knew to stick to my guns, because I first round I did the dancing handkerchief and they told me no. And I said, well, why not? I said, this is a trick that you brought me in for.
Right.
And they said, well, we brought you in for this, but we want you to do something bigger. And I was like, well, I got 2 weeks and this is all I got. This or I can't do the show. And they said, all right, well, you can do that. And then they really made it look good. But it was because I stuck to my guns and didn't let them talk me out of it.
So contractually, they don't necessarily – you don't have to do what they tell you to do. So, okay, I just wondered what the contract
is like. They can't tell you what to do with your material. I mean, they suggest. They strongly suggest. Yes,
okay.
But it's up to you.
Well, they can, I guess, make you look bad.
Oh, they can make you look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, look at Becky Blaney.
I was about to say that.
They made her look like a bumbling, you know, magician when it was part of her act and it was a
Stapleton
comedy piece.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, Dan Stapleton, when Dan went on, when they made him look that acting, Mattioli, first time Jay went on, they made him, he's chasing his birds backstage and stuff. And, you know, they can do it. And that's why you kind of have to play ball a little bit, you know.
Like, because as I recall, I know they also film people because I was helping with Masters of Illusion. I know in the audience how they will record beforehand and then put this together. If you yelling, applauding, laughing, smiling, or just booing or saying X or whatever. And so they had overlaid some boos on those shows. And I've talked with some people who've been on and said, I went over, I thought, pretty well. But when I saw it, I got a different reaction the way they edited it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they couldn't edit me because I did two live performances. So because it was live, there's nothing they could do to me.
Nope, that's
Thank
right.
goodness, you know. But the guys who taped, yeah, they can make you look any way they want.
Well, now, in those tapes, those are the preliminaries, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I went on a weird thing. It was a YouTube round where they picked people off of YouTube.
Oh, that's right, because they'd already reached a certain point, and then they go.
They went and got the YouTube people, and they picked Rudy Kobe, Eric Buss, and the other one was like Dirk Arthur. Who was the one who has his wife? They both had tigers. They were like Texas or Branson. They weren't Branson.
It wasn't Rick Thomas, was it?
No, it wasn't Rick Thomas. Another one of those guys.
Rob Lake.
And his wife did magic too. And,
Kirby Van Burch, maybe?
Yes, I think it was him. And they were the three they picked.
Yeah,
they didn't
Bambi,
pick me.
I think. Mm-hmm.
They didn't pick me. And then all of a sudden, they got a call and they said they had an issue with the ASPCA or something with the cats. And they was like, do you want to come on a show? Can you come on in 2 weeks? I was like, yeah. Okay. But I got in by default because I wasn't originally picked.
Well, that's interesting.
And then I went in and I was with Rudy and Eric, who I knew.
So now, when you did move forward, again, you go in with the idea that, hey, I'm getting some good publicity. And then they say, hey, you're going forward. And then you kind of freak out and say, what am I going to do next week?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. As soon as I got done with the one round and I went to the judgment and they said, oh, a guy going through his puck. And all of a sudden, before I could even breathe, they grabbed me, pulled me in a room and sat me down with the executive producer. And they were like, all right, what you got next?
And just like that.
Just like that. And I gave them the idea to do an ASRO. Mm. And they were like, we don't think it'll work. Because I guess Murray had been on and had tried to do an ASRO with a train and it couldn't vanish. They couldn't make it vanish. Mm-hmm. So they were like, no. And I was like, no, trust me. This beautiful video wall, it'll work. Let me do it. And they said, what else you got? And I said, I can do it with the Coulter chair. They made me do both illusions, have both illusions set. And then at the end, they said, which one do you want to do? And I got to pick. But I mm-hmm. had to prepare both illusions.
And with that, did you have Scott Alexander or other people perhaps?
Scott was there with me the whole time. His wife, mm-hmm. Jenny, was with me. My assistant from the cruise ship from L.A., she flew in. So I had my little support team with me.
That's what I'm often wondering. It seems like after they've gotten to a certain point, because you got in there on your own merit, but then it's like, I need to have some other people give me some other ideas to make sure. Because, as you say, you get a lot of input from the producers who are telling you, you need to do such and such. And then you can kind of go back and say, well, we need to rework this.
Yeah, a lot of these guys use consultants now. They use, like, whether it be Rico de la Vega. I mean, right. They contract these guys in all the time now to help mm-hmm. get them to, get them ideas.
Yep. And do they have people they call on from the show that say, hey, here are some people? Or do the magicians typically have friends?
I'm not really sure.
I mean, like Danny Garcia is a buddy of mine. I call Danny and say, man, help me.
excuse me. I know they bring in a lot of people sometimes. Like if you say, I got a guy, I want to bring him in to help me out.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes, though, I think the show might also have their own consultants that they bring in. Like I know for myself, they had a guy that had consulted for Copperfield, and he gave me all these ideas. He's the one who came up with an idea to make the Azure vanish, and it was beautiful, mm-hmm. something I never thought of. Mm-hmm. And he worked out a thing for the Crystal Casket for us and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, they had some really, really good people on their team at that show.
Now, talk about television still. You said on Penn & Teller, in that case, you go to them with an idea, and then at that point when you were on, I think Johnny Thompson was still alive. Is that right?
Yeah, Johnny was there.
And then Mike Close, of course, is working over there.
Yeah.
So do you do that then before them and they say, that might work or might not. You need to rework that? Or what was your
experience? They basically said, send in some videos and they liked this one video and it says, can you just bring that illusion? And we came in with that illusion. We did a run through for Johnny and Mike and some of the producers. And then we went on and just did it live. Mm-hmm. They run through and they did it live. And that show was great. They treat people like you're doing them a favor, not like the other shows where they treat you like.
Yeah. So they treat you more like royalty because it's about magic and magicians. They respect you for what you're doing.
I mean, it was so good, like to the point where I had to go home to my kids because my kids, I needed to be home. Mm-hmm. And they said, no problem. So they had me tape early. And as soon as I got done, makeup and everything, they put me in a limo and gave me wipes and everything to clean up and change clothes on the way, and it took me right to the airport. It's like, wow. My plan to get home to my kids.
On time.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. I in the end, did you fool them or not?
We scared them. Okay. Scott scared the hell out of Penn. He jumped out of his seat about 4 feet, and he said, you scared the living Jesus out of me, and that's hard to do because I'm an atheist. Yeah, but now the illusion we actually did for them was offered to them by Steinmeier before they saw us do it. But we had a twist on it that they couldn't figure out. And it took them a long time to figure out the twist, but yeah, they got it in the end.
Had you won, would a trophy have been given to both you guys?
Yeah, I believe so.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, I just
wonder if you've got like two magicians
because we're not in the same household. It's not like we're right. Yeah, I think they would. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, have you ever thought about going back? I mean, since it was a good experience, or have you got some more something else to do?
Yeah. I mean, if they'll have me back, yeah, definitely, I'll definitely mm-hmm. go back.
Has Scott talked about going on his own or something? He's got a lot of different ideas.
Yeah, I mean, every year, I mean, and when at first when they started to do repeat people, we tried to go back, and I guess that they had so many other people submitting that we weren't top on their list. So,
well, a lot of times they want to have someone who's already defeated them, basically. Yes. It's like, okay, try it again. See if you can, like Paul Gertner, for an example.
Oh, my
or
gosh,
something.
Yeah. It comes a challenge thing. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
As opposed to somebody's like, well, you didn't get us the first time, so why should we bring you back another time, you know, to try to fool us? Nope, you didn't do it a second time either. So,
yeah, but it's a great show.
It is a good show. I think it does a lot of good for magic and magicians. Now, Puck, one of the things we talked about before we got started, and I kind of want to get into this a little bit, and that is your name, Puck, which Malcolm Puckering, but Puck is your nickname.
Yes.
Which is obviously just short for Puckering. What nationality is it? What is Puckering?
My my father's from Barbados, and it's British West Indies. And Puckering, actually, they call it Puckering. There was no G in Barbados. When they came over to America, they added the G.
Okay.
To become Puckering. But it's an English name. Mm-hmm. And my family had a travel club when we were younger called Puck's Travel Club, because Puck was always a nickname. Mm-hmm. I had Uncle Puck's. My brother was Big Puck. I was Little Puck, you know.
Yeah.
So it was always a name that was given to me by friends. And when I became a magician and I took that name, Puck, as a stage name, it was weird because people would say, hey, Puck, how you doing? I'm like, you don't know me that well. You know, it felt like, you call me Malcolm. You don't know me that well. Yeah. You know, so I always felt weird. And now I'm used to it. Everybody just calls me Puck. But.
Which, by the way, Puck was a Shakespearean Shakespeare character.
Midsummer's Night.
He was kind of an impish character.
Yeah, he was a mischievous little sprite.
Right. So that's what I thought of when I first heard of Puck. I thought, okay, he's taken the name from Shakespeare, but that's not necessarily the case. But do you see yourself as a mischievous sprite or not really? You don't take that character on stage.
No, definitely not on stage. Okay. Yeah.
And as we were talking about with Max Maven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Max, he asked me, I said, you know, is my real name Puck? And I explained the whole thing to him. Yeah. And he said it was very similar to him, because he said that the best way to prove to him that you don't know him is to call him Phil.
Yeah.
You know, he says everybody says, he said his family calls him Max. You know?
Right. Well, it's like with Banachek as well. Once he went to Banachek, and some people think, okay, well, I remember him with Steve Shaw. Well, yeah. And they think they're cool because they're calling him Steve. And it's the same kind of a thing. It's even, I mean, it was a business partner and best friend. I call him Banachek.
Yeah.
I think that Giant Thompson is the first one to start calling Banny. I always thought that was funny. Shortening that.
Now people call me Malcolm. Now I'm like, huh?
You're not used to that. Yeah.
Yes.
I understand. Well, like with Lance Burton, that was one of the things that was in the contest about what is Lance's middle name. Yeah. And for those who have listened this far into the podcast, as I understand it, Lance is his middle name. His first name is William. William Lance Burton.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on my questionnaire.
You might win something. There you go. Well, listen, it's been delightful. I've had a lot of fun getting to know you a lot better. And this has been fun. So the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. What is it that influences you, or is your philosophy of life, that your chi? What is it that drives you?
Wow.
Yeah. Now it's time for the heavy stuff.
No, I just try not to take anything. Definitely try not to take anything too serious. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of times people, when they see an entertainer, they put you on a certain level. But then, you know, if you let that get to your head, you know, at the end of the day, we're magicians, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to have your head too big. You can't get in the door.
Yeah, we're a step away from, you know, mime.
Be modest. Exactly. Yeah, hopefully a big step up.
Yeah, just try not to take anything too serious, because, you know, life is really, really short.
Mm-hmm. And you're loving life.
Yes.
That's great. Yes. Well, good luck to you. Congratulations on what you've achieved, and look forward to seeing more stuff that you're going to be doing.
I appreciate
it. It's great. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Puck. This is Scotty out. Well, that was great. Thanks a lot, Puck. It was really great getting to know you, and also I assume the rest of you listeners have gotten a lot out of that as well, so now you know Puck as well. So thank you again for listening to this week's episode and for subscribing to our pod letter. And wait, what? You don't subscribe to the pod letter? We have over 1,000 people who have already subscribed. There are thousands more who have not yet, and that means you. If you have not yet signed up for the pod letter, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and you will see a place there where you can subscribe to our weekly pod letter to find out who's going to be on this week, who's coming up next week, some suggestions from the archives, and perhaps a few other little tidbits of information that you might like to know, particularly like when we have contests. Our subscribers are the first ones to know about these kinds of contests. Please go and subscribe to our pod letter. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, don't take anything too seriously, because life is really short. This is Scotty out.